My name is David. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety dates, and I know a lot of you all remember this, April 1st of Y2K. I go to a lot of young people's meetings and down in the Bethesda, and sometimes they're looking at the EMS. What's amazing. Thanks to good sponsorship, higher power, and Alcoholics Anonymous. They just don't have to drink anymore. And we get a lot of other things out of all that, practicing this program, but not drinking is why we're here. Right? Yeah. Oh, man. Billy, thank you so much for asking me to come out here. And I didn't even ask, you know, it's one of these things when you come to talk. I looked at the schedule, but I didn't even ask you, how long do I get? An hour and a half? Or... Wow. You know, it's like when I go to like detox and stuff in some place, I speak for half an hour and I'm always left feeling like, man, I wish I had more time, you know? I had all this other stuff to say to these guys and everything. And now it's an hour and geez, am I gonna talk that long? You know? Being an alcoholic is pretty cool. And I say, Joe, thank you very much for asking me. When Billy did ask me, I said, I wonder why he's asking me. And I've known Billy for a while. There was one time when I was speaking up here at your group, the Sunday night meeting, and Billy, I wouldn't even notice. Someone that, I think Dale talked me through it and everything, but Billy was asked to speak in one of our meetings. And so we passed each other. I didn't even see him. I don't know how that happened. Is that an odd moment or a God moment or what? I have no idea. Let me think. I get to sponsor other men through the program about Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And it's kind of strange because I don't have a full college degree. I got a high school education. You know, I always end up sponsoring attorneys. Not all of them, but a lot of them. So I'm on the phone. I talk with my sponsors, a few of them. When they call, if they want to join the call, fine. It's actually a Zoom call that we set up because one of my sponsors and I have been reading for 21 years every morning, except for weekend mornings, every weekend morning. 7:15 a.m. You know, and we read literature, mostly what we do. And we have read a lot of books. Started out right with the big book, going through the work, the steps, you know. And then we progressed from there through, you know, just about every other bit of, what do you call it, conference approved literature and a lot of spiritual books after that, and some that are not approved. But it's really good to start the day off reading with people. So now, it's been up to three or four people. Now, the other day I was on with three and me being the third, and we're talking. And, you know, we don't talk politics a lot, but these guys are like in the know, right? One of them's a lobbyist, and one is an attorney for the federal government. And he can't even tell us what he does most of the time, but one works for the state of Pennsylvania. So we don't talk politics a lot, but we just happen to, it's crazy times, right? You know, the things that are going on nowadays, you know, we don't talk about it in meetings or especially argue about it and everything. But I kind of don't have much of a filter, and sometimes I like to shake things up, right? So we're on this call, right? And we're talking about how crazy the times are. And, you know, none of us give our, you know, real opinions about it this way or that, just talking facts, straight facts, right? And so I said, you know, based in the light of all this stuff going on, how would you guys feel if I imposed a 10% tariff on sponsorship? Now, my mistake is that I sponsored these guys. And I was kind of testing them, and they came back with exactly, you know, they came back with, well, all traditions, right? Non-professional, but, you know. We don't get paid for 12-step work, right? Things like that. And, oh, my God, for fun and for free, one of them piped up with, you know? I got that on my license plate at the bottom, you know? I don't know if anybody ever sees it, but it makes me feel good where I come. And it's just a good thing. It's a great way to start out a morning, and I'm really grateful for the men that I've got to sponsor over the years. Let me see how to start this. A lot of us come from different areas. A lot of you, and you know, most, a lot of the meetings I go to, there's, you know, maybe two or three people my age, right? I was born in 1957, and To see a lot of you guys around here, I'm going, man, there is just so much sobriety in this room and everything. And there is. And I feel like I belong completely. But I'm going to date myself with this. I don't remember my first thing. I remember the first time I actually started to feel the effects produced by the alcohol. That's the memory there that gets me. That's the memory that feeling that I searched for the next 26 years. So it's a bunch of friends off. And I got together, and we were young in between, like, junior high, they had those back then, and high school, and now they're middle school, I guess. And we pulled our paper route money, except for my good buddy Kevin, because his mother always gave him money. He was a good friend to have. Yeah. Later, we were allowed to drink, but that's a whole other thing. And we got one of our older brothers to go down, and if you're anybody from Bethesda around here, or near any area, Maryland at all, right?
Yeah. Maryland.
Arlington, nice, nice. Well, I was up in Rockville, not quite Bethesda at that time. And we got one of our older brothers to go down over the DC line to a place called Morris Miller, which was a place that would sell booze anytime, you know, because they could in DC, right? And he got us, of all things, we probably asked for it, four or five bottles of Boone's Farm Wine. It was the 70s. And it tastes of good spirit. In fact, then you can like pull the tops off, right? And put them together and make chains, right? You know? It was really good, man. So we brought it down the woods, right? Because that's where we hung out. We had been hanging out there for a long time. We had dabbled in a little bit of weed and all this other stuff. And we had logs set up and you know, and a fire pit in the middle. It kind of felt like home for a while, right? Yeah, it really was. Back then in those days, yeah, you leave home. I would leave home because my parents would give us chores when we were in. They saw us sitting around. We weren't allowed to watch any television other than that approved by the Catholic standard. And I couldn't even watch Star Trek. I had to watch what all that stuff, whatever was approved. And so we brought that stuff down the woods, right? We're sitting around, and someone had brought a transistor radio. I guess, you know, later on it would have been called a boombox. Or whatever. Now we probably just call it a phone, you know? And, I can clearly remember Don McLean singing that song, Bye Bye America, Bye on the radio, right? I think it was relatively new that year, too. And some of the young people probably looking it up. Oh, yeah. Here's what we did. We started passing that Boone's Farm, right? I had such a beer and stuff and started passing it around. You know, I want to backtrack and ask a question here. And I don't know, you know, that I usually ask. Is there anybody here for their first 30, 60 days? I spoke with you out front. So welcome. You know, like that. Is there anybody here in their last 30, 60 days? Anybody will admit, right? We know who you are because we've been watching. I hope it's not me. Sometimes we know, sometimes we don't. It's just lately I've seen the past year people that I thought were working this program. They looked like they were doing it to the best of their. They were doing it to the best of their ability. They looked like they were doing everything that I did. Maybe not quite as much, but doing everything. And who am I to judge anybody anyway? And they go out and they leave us and they die, you know, especially young people, you know, with the fentanyl and all that stuff. It's like, oh my God, I want people to stay so bad. I'd do anything to try to make them feel welcome and inclusive. And, you know, my first sponsor was kind of all, you know, the hard line, God bless him, was just what I needed. But, you know, he'd say things that would piss people off. And maybe 10% of the people would come back later and go, thank you, you saved my life by telling me the truth, you know. You know, nowadays it's too easy for some of the people to go out and get a resentment and go out just for a little while and try something and then they're gone. You know, it's had a lot, having fun. I mean, it's tragic and baffling. So we're sitting around the woods, we're passing that bottle around, and I think, you know, it goes around to me. I take a big sip because that's how I drink, and I wanted to look good in front of my friends, right? A couple of them were trying to drink as much as they could. And nothing happened, you know, and it comes around again and I take another big sip and it tastes pretty good, you know, sweet. I don't know if there's any grapes in that stuff, but it tasted good, you know. And nothing happened again. I'm about ready to tell him, well, break the weed out if something happens when I do that, you know? And that's the third time he came around. Guess what happened? I started to feel the effect produced by alcohol. And I didn't even know I was looking for it. Didn't even know I needed it. I was just a goofy kid. No one in my house was alcoholic, you know? My twin brother, my sister, my parents, they share a bottle of cold duck on Friday nights, unless my mother was Randy, then they'd have two. And they wouldn't even finish the second one. You know? I remember it clearly, you know. It'd be left in there, I'd take sips every once in a while, you know, when I was real young, you know. But I felt that feeling produced by the alcohol, and I just loved it for some reason. All of a sudden, I could sing to that song, and I had never heard it before, you know. All of a sudden, my friends, who were my friends lifelong, right, through elementary school, right, it became closer, you know. It wasn't just drunkenly, oh, you're my best buddy, but it turned into that at some point later on. I felt like I was with the right people at the right time, doing the right thing right then and there, you know. And I often don't feel like that. You know, I used to never feel like that. I was always a little kid. I had classic ADD. They didn't call it ADD back then or ADHD back then or anything. It was always just, boy, David just misbehaves all the time. And he can't sit still. He doesn't apply himself. He's not living up to his potential, right? I heard that all the time. When my twin brother was a straight-A student, my sister was a straight-A student, boy, there's teachers that saw me come in and thought they were getting insane, right? So I was a disappointment. And I was always doing things to get people to like me. And I'd go to extremes. And it wasn't until later on that I got sober that I finally realized that doing all those things, and I did it later on in life too, to get people to like me or to notice me even, were the exact things that were driving them away. Doing the exact opposite. Delusional, right? Totally delusional. Delusional being that I believe something that's just not true. And I really believe it in my core. I only know what I know, right? But I got that effect that first night. And a couple other things happened. About 11:30 that night, 10:30, I don't remember the time. That was a long time ago. My twin brother came up to me and said, David, we got to go home. We've got a curfew. You know? We had done something or come home late last Friday or whatever. And that was back in the days, and I thought to tell this to you, know, back in the days when it was okay for your parents to wail on you with a curtain rod a little bit. You know, they loved me, but mostly just scare us, right? They hurt a little bit, but, you know, my mother wore the pants in the family, you know. You know, she could scare us by waking my dad up and he turned into a raving lunatic. And I was like, whoa, this guy, you know. He'll be in church and be in the usher tomorrow morning, you know. I love my something be wrong, and my mother was my advocate and everything. But I told my twin brother when he said that the exact thing that probably 90, maybe everybody in this room would say, you know, forget it, man. There's no wine left. I don't care what happens, you know. You know, see, unbeknownst to me, that physical allergy that we as alcoholics have that separates us, for example, if you're thinking, right? Had been kicked off. I didn't know what it was for years and years and years, but I do know that it happened, and I do know that it happened until the day I quit, took my last drink. You know, once I take a drink of alcohol, once I took that first drink, something happened in here that set off this mental craving beyond my control. I thought it was my idea, right? And I wanted more. You know, more would be better. And where we get those ideas, I have no idea, you know. What you say in the big book, though? Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol? Yeah, I'm with it, man. You take that one to church, you know. You know. So that happened, you know. Another thing happened. I started planning. You know, I was young, right? And I didn't have a lot of money. And it wasn't, you know, going to school and everything. I couldn't get booze. But how am I going to get more booze? Right from then and there, you know. I drank as much as I could safely, sometimes way more than I could safely, every chance I got for the next 26 years, you know, through a lot of different things, through relationships that I gave away, through jobs that I gave away, through opportunities that we give away. Maybe I'll talk a little bit about a couple of those, you know. I was the kid that would drink before high school at 7:30 a.m., behind the school at the tennis courts. by myself. You know, none of my friends wanted to, they were alcohol. They turned out to be alcohol too, but they wouldn't even drink with me like that back then. See, what I do is I wake up early and I dump out the Blue Bonnet margarine thing. We didn't even have Tupperware, I don't think, back then. And I steal liquor out of the Paris cabinet, right? And I bring it up there and drink and drink and drink till it was gone. I probably had like, what, 3 shots, right? Couldn't take too much. That was enough to get the day started. And then second period was electricity class. And I quickly found out you could burn hash in the resistors. I thought I was brilliant. That's the only class I ever failed. The lady from the campus, when the teacher found out. And I was the best in there, right? You know, I know many other people did that because of my. Anyway. It's amazing how we do that. I wasn't the best student, you know. I skipped a lot of school. Oh my gosh, I did. You know. After that electricity class, it was almost lunchtime. It was time to go to McDonald's, Mickey D's for lunch, right? One of my friends had a car. We'd go out and smoke a little bit of stuff, and oftentimes not make it back. Oftentimes I did, though. You know, I did it for a few other ways. Just because we're alcoholics, it doesn't mean we don't have capabilities. You know, doesn't mean we're not good at different things. I stopped judging drunks, young alcoholics, men that asked me to smoke some years and years ago. I had to, based out of my experience of it. You know, there's like the time that I walked into a treatment center early on with my sponsor at the time. And I'm looking over to the right, and here's this kid sitting there. He's a pale white guy with long black dreadlocks, and he had a lot of them, right? And his eyes were sunken, and he had tattoos, and his arms were like this, you know. He was one of them, fancied himself an MMA fighter. He did it, actually, a little bit, you know, not real famous or anything. And I make this snide comment to my sponsor. Good God, Steve, would you look at that? Knowing my luck, I'll end up sponsoring. Guess what? That's a good story. I didn't even recognize him. So I was going into that detox, and I also had started meeting at a halfway house. And guess who showed up there? Didn't recognize him. His black dreadlocks were gone. His eyes weren't sunken. He had blonde hair, short hair. You know? Guy turned out to be one of my best sponsees, friends for years and years, you know, and very talented, you know. So I just stopped turning. Many more, you know, things happen like that. So back to this. I'm drinking before high school, doing all that stuff. We get booted out of high school. They just, problem kids like me, even though our grades aren't the best, they push us out, right? We're good enough, right? They'll try your hand at college, you know, which I did. But by then, 3 years of drinking with all the keg parties and these other things that happened, drinking whiskey every day is not conducive to higher education. When both my sister and brother went on to have advanced degrees and all this and that, and they still do, and I love them and everything. I'm just different, you know. I can accept that. Another thing happened in high school. I had my first girlfriend, right? Don't we just fall in love? Here's a question I'd like to ask. It doesn't make us alcoholic, but it often is something that a lot of alcoholics have, a characteristic or a life experience that a lot of alcoholics have. How many people in here have not had a contentious relationship with another human being? This was my hand. Now, I know a lot of other people have it, but every alcoholic almost has that, you know? It's just what we do. And I'll try to explain why I think I did that, right? So I met my first girlfriend in high school. I did stuff. Like, I actually played the drums. And I was in the high school bagpipe band. I was the straightest group in the school. And I had long hair down here. I was always stoned. And I didn't care. I loved to play the drums. I was also in a major in drum corps. I played in all the parades, and we played at the Scottish games, and I remember marching at the Philadelphia, and just a whole bunch of different parades. That was really cool, right? That was one part. So out of that, I developed a relationship with this young lady. She was a young Jewish girl. Religion doesn't matter, but she was straight. She ended up being a concert pianist, and we shared a locker together. I really liked her, you know. There wasn't any hanky-panky going on, and. Man, I was so immature. I used to go home and watch Kim with the White Lion on television cartoon in high school, right? The first, And she called me up and we talked, and she played piano songs for me to listen to. And I think it was really cool, you know. And then the bad girl moved up from Florida. Gone was a nice girl. Now I'm going to my 50th high school reunion this year. And I went to one not too long ago. And the first girlfriend was there. And I kind of, I know I didn't know if I had to or not, but it just felt right. And I kind of made amends for dumping her like that. And I know she didn't care, but I felt maybe I had to do it. And I just said, I was so immature. You know, I was such a jerk. And I was. I didn't know any better. Delusional, right? Damn. So, the bad girl moves up. Now, there is something going on with her, because she has something going on with her. But, and I just fell in love with her, right? That's my MO. I didn't think these women. What I'm trying to do is emulate what I see in my parents and all the other people around me. Said we move in together and set up house and everything. And man, you know, she was a mess. You know, I was too. Is that you? I don't remember. Yeah. Oh, I do remember. You know, and so having this story, we're living together right after high school, right? And we're always, she's trying to fix me up because I'm a fixer upper. Clearly. You know, I'm trying to fix her up. She's a fixer upper. See, what I do have is this delusion. I have this delusion that I can rush satisfaction and happiness out of life if I can only manage it well, right? I don't even know what that means, really, but I'm doing it, right? Who else is going to do stuff for me, you know? But I also think that I can manage her. If she would just do what I want her to do, everything would be fine. She's trying to get me to manage my life, right? If only he would do what I want him to do and never talk, everything would be fine. Oh, he needs to listen, too. I've been accused of not listening. Anyway, what happens in a relationship like that? We've all been in them, maybe, you know, maybe not. But we're always butting heads, right? And it goes beyond relationships. It goes into my job, because I think if the job would run, I'm smart. I know how they should run their successful company, right? I can make it better, right? And I voice my opinion, and I get my little resentments and my little ideas. And so my job's not going right, right? You know, they seem to think I should show up sober and on time, you know? And just, I do more work than anybody there. What's wrong with, like, come in whenever I want? Doesn't work that way, right? So not only just relationships, we're always butting heads. Jobs, man, relationships, parents. I gotta chase away everybody I love in my life for a period of time, you know? Don't give things away. They don't leave me. I chase them away. And just to chase away the people that I love most in the world, man, what? That's self-defeating. Well, you know, I did a lot of that, you know? What happens when I'm in a relationship like that, right? Well, the obvious thing when any male is, you ain't getting her. That doesn't make me feel good. It's her fault. She's controlling everything, controlling my life. Besides that, she's a real vivacious, really beautiful young bartender. So if you're a young guy over here, maybe you don't want to date a young, good-looking bartender. It's you know, set myself up for, you know, emotional distress and hurt feelings. Now, when I'm feeling like that, when she's not doing what I want her to do, when I'm, you know, just everything, life seems against me, I get restless, irritable, discontent. I get sometimes rageful. Sometimes I'm just like right below the radar. What is wrong with me, you know? Why can't I have a normal relationship? That's all I'm looking for. I never really seem to think that it's me, though. Another delusion. I think it's always a situation or blaming on something or someone or something like that. When I'm feeling like that, I've already got the solution because I found it in the woods that day. It's taking a drink or a drug. Now, you know, a lot of us back in the 70s, well, it doesn't matter. Take drugs, don't take drugs. They had some really good acid and some really good PCP back in a lot of other stuff. And so we dabbled in all that stuff. Oh, God, sometimes that was really crazy. You know? Doing things like sitting in my friend's, Devin's basement. We're allowed to drink there, you know, and drugs. And his brother had guns, and we take turns shooting the light switches off the wall. Wow. How dangerous and stupid is that, right? And then the summer break, someone would go down and get fireworks, and we all, you know, hold our legs up and then put a whole string of fireworks underneath the sofa. Oh, boy, we have good fun, right? Smoke filled room. And I did make amends to his mother because she was hanging out by the time I got sober. And well, I'm going to that, just like you said, I told her all this stuff I did and everything, you know, and you know, shooting all that and drinking in her house, total disrespect. She said, none of that bothered me. I knew you guys were doing that. I felt safer having them here than, you know, out on the street doing it because it gets into trouble, you know? And he goes, but I do remember you driving over here drunk with your two infant sons in the car. And I was like, oh my God. That hurt her the most. Yeah. So our eyes get opened by people. It's over. Oh, so I'm doing that. I'm living with her, and you know, I'm working. You know, I dropped out. I started working in the restaurant where she was a bartender. And so just because, like I said, we're capable people, I worked my way up. And, you know, I started out there as a porter, which meant I cleaned bathrooms and mopped the kitchen floors and did stuff like that before everybody opened. And worked my way up to working in the kitchen, worked my way up to kitchen manager pretty quickly, and then worked my way up to manager. And here's something else we do a lot of. Give away opportunities, right? So the owner of this one restaurant I was working at, he was like an entrepreneur, and he had some money, and he approached me one day, and his plan was, I'm going to open up a chain of these restaurants. And he probably did it, you know? I want you to come along with me. You can be a manager and help out. What an opportunity, right? Well, they had a wedding reception at the restaurant about 2 weeks later, and there was a lot of alcohol abuse, you know? There was like trays of wine, red, pink, tablecloths in between them, and they had flowers and all this. Oh my God, it looked beautiful to me. And they didn't drink the wine, just a little bit of it. And the boss said, yeah, take it in the back, get rid of it, we can't resell it. I did, one glass at a time. While my guys were cleaning up the kitchen and we were closing up. And I woke up on the floor of the restaurant, you know, and one of my guys mopping the floor must have spilled mop water on me. My pants were wet. So embarrassing that I absolutely could not continue in the restaurant industry. It wasn't for me. So I did something else that a lot of alcoholics do. I did a complete geographic and life change. Cure, right? Oh my gosh. I ran away and joined the Merchant Marine. A friend of mine had ties with the union. And I got into a union school when I went to school. And when I got out of there, man, that was really cool. Guys from all of the United States were in there all doing the same thing. And, you know, got together with my group that was the smokers, and everybody was drinking. Now, it was a dry school. We had to get the people outside the fence to pay them money to go get us stuff and smuggle it back in. But we had plenty. You know, I learned where to hide stuff on ships, really nice. And, oh, man, my first, when I got out of there, I didn't know what I was going to do. But I ended up going down to Corpus Christi, Texas, and getting on a deep sea going tugboat and barge unit, one of the big ones. They were transporting like 250,000 barrels of gasoline, jet fuel, whatever. I worked on large, small, in between there. As a matter of fact, I thought maybe you couldn't drink on board the thing, but they had booze in the refrigerator. As long as you got your job done, didn't abuse it, and didn't fall overboard, you could drink. You know, not a lot of compassion on something like that with a bunch of hard men. Some were really hard men. And boy, they used to tell me, Dave, you don't belong here. You belong on a college campus, toting a bag of books, you know. But that's where I ended up, an alcoholic. I loved it. And not a lot of compassion, but we had each other's back. And, you know, anything happened, we walked down. And I got a chance to drink in most portside bars from Bucksport, Maine to Corpus Christi, Texas, Bahamas, Puerto Rico, you know. It was like an adventure. You know, here I am, Huck Finn, alcoholic. Forrest Gump, you know. And, so we worked 3 weeks on, 3 weeks off, and so I could drink for 3 weeks and drug for 3 weeks while I was home, you know, and I did, and I learned how to kind of space it out, right? That helped me out later on in life. And then I go back to work and we could drink and drug until a guy wrecked a ship in Prince William Sound, Alaska, he's a little guy, and the Coast Guard started us doing this mandatory drugging. Alcohol testing, and we couldn't drink and drug at work. You know, I almost thought I needed to get a new job. But I didn't, and like I say, we're not dumb people and everything. So I started going to school, and shame on the Coast Guard. Months later, they gave me a license to drive these huge ships and stuff. And I did that. And I want to say it's like 90% sheer boredom. You're out in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico, you're fishing, dragging a barge behind you, like, quarter mile, half mile behind you on steel rope that I found out was made right here. Dale was telling me that, right? Someone, they got a steel rope company here. Yeah. I'm talking about steel rope like that thick, pulling this barge, and it's beautiful. Sometimes the water on the Gulf of Mexico would be totally slick calm. You could see a reflection in it, Sometimes it would be so rough that you kept the trash can area just in case you had to throw up, And the 10% sheer terror. And I say that, it was just very tense, like driving a tug and barge unit, the smaller ones, up a river at night, like maybe up the Hudson River, going up to Albany at night, in the fall, running by radar, trusting radar. Man, trusting God? I don't know. But I did that job for a number of years. And in between these relationships, that first relationship went by the wayside after years. I found another one that liked me, right? And she was fun. She was like a kind of quasi country girl. She had tattoos, rode a motorcycle, and stuff like that. We get really drunk together. We loved it. Sometimes we'd be drinking with my friends, and she'd get a fight into a fight with him and win. My kind of woman. But really, I loved it. Moved in together, same thing. But God, I'm so delusional thinking that if I keep doing these things, then it's going to be different. Keep hoping, right? And not knowing, just so immature and so not with it, drinking and drugging. And mostly drinking. I drank more. Delusionally. Let's go back to that first line. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. I think the very next line goes on to say something like this. But after a time, that although the sensation is so elusive, after a time we can't differentiate the true from the false. I think I like the effect produced by alcohol. It does work at times for a little while. Oftentimes, if I take time to look, it's not working. Do I really like owing all my money to attorneys? Do I like waking up with the charges? Do I like waking up handcuffed to the police table in Glenmont, Maryland? A couple times, right? Do I like waking up and find that I've been directing traffic on a busy street? Are there any traffic directors here? Do I like chasing away? I know there's the people that I love, once again, and just baffled by the sheer existence of life. Yeah, I'm feeling like that. A drink is a good idea. I need a drink. I gotta have one. I'm delusional, I don't even know where I left off with that, but so I'm working that job in between relationships and everything. That job went by the wayside. And one day they had these mass layoffs. I could still have laundry, and I could have gotten more work. They hired everybody else back, but I had found myself married at that time, right? The third one. And I had two children and two dogs and two cars, and I drove just about everything. Two boxes of wine. I stopped drinking whiskey as much as I could. I still drank it, but I'd always get arrested and in trouble. And still people get some people call me box wine Dave in certain meetings. Hey, box wine. Well, yeah, thank you. Least they notice me, I'm in the right spot, box of wine Dave. So I was down drinking boxes of wine. Oh my God. Just having to move forward in the direction. So I'm drinking these boxes of wine. I'm working. I've got everything that I want. I switched to the sales job because the tugboat thing had mass layoffs and everything instead of going back. I got a sales job. God working in my life. A guy hired me selling office supplies and furniture to the federal government. I didn't even own a suit. Yeah, I had to get one. I called him sick on the first time we were supposed to travel together for sales calls because I got so drunk the night before. And I lied to my boss the first time. And I told him that, I was very ill and I had a cold and whatnot. Can we reschedule, please? And he did, right? And he hired me. The only reason I even got to know him was in between the merchant marine job and the sales job that I got, I was selling alarm systems door to door. And I was smart enough to know that if I went to the real big houses in the wealthier neighborhoods and showed them how we, personal experience, right? How we could break into their houses, steal their stuff, created me, right? They would buy alarm systems. And I didn't sell them, I didn't do it long enough. It's not a good job. But I did it this one house, and the lady looked at me and said, "We're not going to buy an alarm system from you." No, I got to go. She said, "But my husband, he was upstairs doing something. He manages a company selling office supplies and furniture to the federal government. He's looking for salespeople. I like the way you did that. You might want to call him." And I heard. Most of the time, I don't hear or even care about what people are trying to tell me, right? But I heard her, and I called her. And long story short, traveled with him, and he hired me. That was 31 years ago. I still work there. Things change, right? I still work there. Now I'm grateful I get to travel all over the United States, mostly to military bases and stuff like that, you know, creating contracts and selling large furniture projects to the federal government. Really cool stuff. Some of the same towns and cities I was visiting when I was in the Merchant Marine, you know. But so there, towards the end of my drinking, now I drank a lot and so many different things happened. Don't have time to even talk about them all. Crazy stuff, right? Almost dying stuff. And just drinking. You see, I wasn't the type that drank until the point that I had to go to the hospital or you know, I didn't do drugs. That I didn't do drugs after a while, so I wasn't going to be like forced into recovery like I see a lot of people doing now. It was just like this slow progression. You know, me getting sicker and sicker, me not growing emotionally, me not growing spiritually, you know, me being in that same spot where life just, what is going on? Why didn't she leave me alone and just let me drink in the basement? I'll give her all the money. Mm-hmm. Right, she seemed to think I should come up out of there and help with the children. Which is why I saw my parents doing everything, but I had forgotten that part, right? Anyway, she's about to divorce me, and I don't want it to happen anymore. And I would pray, just like, God, get me out of this. Just, what do I do? This is the point a lot of us get to. You know, we don't even believe in God. I believe in God, but I had no personal relationship, didn't really know, you know, what it was and everything. And I just say those prayers. I really mean it. On a hungover Sunday morning, driving by myself, you know. Help me, whatever it is. I think when we say that, you know, when we get close to that power, no matter what situation, desperation, I mean, we get answers. You know, we've all seen it. We've heard other people tell us. I got answers. One morning I woke up wanting to call an outpatient detox. I called down there and I had a job, you know, a sales job, 9 to 5, and told them all about me. They asked me all those questions we asked, and they said, "Yep, Mr. Green, we can help you. Why don't you come down here tonight?" And I said, "Well, how about next Tuesday? The Redskins are playing football. Do you need all that football somewhere?" All this delusional stuff, right? I found out you can. It's become more fun lately. And you'll understand that if you've ever been a commander's Redskins fan or whatever. She said, "No." Turned out she was one of us later on. No, you come down here tonight. They let me stay. I did. I thought maybe she wanted to meet me, but whatever it takes. And they let me stay because I had insurance, right? And they did their job. They told me to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I went to Alcoholics Anonymous because I like people like me. I want to do good in whatever I do. I can do good in anything I do. I can do well. Most of us can. All we have to do is apply ourselves and ask a lot of questions. And so I walk into my first AA, so maybe it was the second AA meeting. And oh God, how much time do I have here? What? All right. 20 minutes? I can get sober in 20 minutes. Can you stay sober in 20 minutes? To drive. First AA meeting I go to, it was like a club. It was called 12 and 12, the backroom smoking meetings. And I walk in there, and you know how you get different people leaving and stuff. You know what? They got a biker to leave that night. And there were like bikes out front, a lot of them. And at the end of the meeting, I find myself in my suit, standing around holding hands with a bunch of bikers with chains, leather clad, couldn't see the floor because of all the smoke. Sandy, how, Father? That's not like any Catholic church I was in. Back and told, look, meeting was okay, but I don't have enough money to buy a bike. I can't join the class. I think these things, right? And they said, why don't you try another one? So I did. I go to my second meeting, and I walk in, and Sam might be remembering this guy. Out of the corner of my eye, I see this old guy walking. Old guy, right? I see this old guy walking across the room, and he's smiling. As a matter of fact, they're all smiling, and I know I walked into a cult. And I know they can't possibly, because I'm not feeling like smiling. You know, I'm so self-centered, I think everybody should feel like me. He smiles and he walks real cocky, and he sticks his hand out and goes, how you doing? I'm going, get the heck away from me. But I told him what a lot of new people tell me today, I'm doing fine. And I proceeded to tell him a little bit about how I was. And he gave me a big book. Oh, he gave me this big book right here. Don't you love it? When we walk up to the podium with books, right? Never even look at them or talk about them. Maybe, well, hopefully we'll talk about it, you know. As a matter of fact, I only brought this because a long time ago I was speaking at a meeting, and I started talking about traditions, and I thought they were going to start throwing me. Good thing we have a big book. And he told me, why don't you sit down over here? And he's telling me what to do. Good God, he became my first sponsor. He always told me what to do. I mean, in retrospect, he was telling me what to do. He was making suggestions. You know, sometimes I wish he would have told me what to do. He wasn't a real compassionate man, but he loved me, right? Cut and dry, right? Your way or the highway. If you don't like what I say, go out there and try some more drinking. You know, if you're alcoholic, you'll be back. Maybe not. No skin off his back, but he really did care. I thought he didn't know how I was feeling, right? He knew exactly how I was feeling. He had walked into the room feeling just like me, just like we do 10 years earlier. He had found the program, worked at 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, was working with other men, found a higher power, and he was there to pass that on so he could keep all that stuff. I had no idea, you know? He took me through the steps. Told me to call him every day. Good God, I'm not calling another man. Maybe his sister. That's how it feels like, you know? And I wasn't calling him, but I was still going to meetings. I wasn't drinking, going to this outpatient thing. And I don't know if you, but when I stopped drinking, I get worse. Like a little bit of a solution. And I started getting angrier, more bewildered, short, you know, impatient, you know? And then I'm quitting drinking. And then this woman that I'm married to keeps telling me I ought to do this and do that, this and that. I'm not doing this right. When is the spirituality going to kick in? And I don't know what to do. And so I call this guy up and I finally start calling him, right? And he said, I wonder when you break down enough to call me. He took me through the 12 steps freaking perfectly. Excuse me, let me say that. I look back on it, it is an amazing example as I've ever seen in my life, the way he took me through the 12 steps. He'd read to me every day and he'd explain things. He got me involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, gave me my first coffee position. I don't think I made coffee for years after that because, see, I made him tub of coffee. It was strong. He was always, you're using too much coffee, man. It's too paid for that coffee. He was annoying too, you know. It was cool, you know. Got me involved in all that service and stuff, you know. And he'd pick me up and take me to meetings, right? And we're down there in Gaithersburg, Rockville area of Maryland. We've been going up 95. And I tell him, well, Steve, there's a meeting right there in Rockville. And he goes, well, we're going 60 mile an hour. It's kind of hard to jump out. You might as well stay. It was just what I needed. It turned out I found out that he was an ex-undercover DC narcotics agent back in the 70s, little surfer co or something, right? He had some hellacious experiences. I don't see how he got through it without drinking, which he didn't, but oh my God. And I love that guy. I talked to him the other day, even though he lives in South Carolina now, not my sponsor. We talked. We'd be going up there to the Harbor City Speakers meeting because he wanted to show me what a pocket of enthusiasm was like, you know, I got to meet people like Tom Flynn, and I can use his name now, I think, because he's deceased, and other guys that I could use, Dave Duncan, and a bunch of people. And there's people who were doing what we do. And I saw a meeting where they had greeting lines, and it was like over 100 people. I had not been to a meeting that big, you know. And then one day he picks me up and says, well, you know, we're going south on 95. It's becoming a, like, I'm going to have it with him or something, you know. And he'd say, well, we're going down to Richmond, Virginia. Okay. We're going to stack out the room. We're going to stay overnight because this is a mini conference. I, Steve, you know, we've talked about this. I did not even tell my family I was leaving. He says, I've been in your house. They don't like you very much right now. Now, he was such a hardline sponsor that when I told some others in the group I was in that I asked him to be my sponsor, I'm serious. A couple of the older people said, you might want to reconsider that. But I didn't. Thank God I didn't. It was just what I needed, you know. And so I went down there and met Al and all those guys down there. And I still know a lot of them today. And I met my current sponsor there. He was one of the speakers at the conference. And he was putting me in the middle of alcohol. We did a four-step workshop when I had about a year. And I was one of the speakers on the four-step. Because he said, well, you just did one, right? Recently. You probably remember better than the rest of us. You know, he put me in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was grateful for that. He tricked me into doing service. He was so busy in service, and he did that demonstration, right? Not by telling me I needed to do it, by going with him and seeing what he was doing. Oh my God, he did a lot of service, you know. So I started doing as much service as I could, you know, and I had no idea that a lot of people weren't doing that. And I still do it to this day. I'm grateful it's become a way of life. I don't think I could live without it, you know. So I found out that I can start staying sober now. I worked through the steps the first time. I had that develop that spiritual awakening, which for me is just like a conscious contact with some type of power. When I was new, he'd drive me crazy with questions like, we'd be at certain parts of the big book, maybe even the second step we agnostic for. He'd go, David, what's your problem? You? No, he didn't. That's not the right answer. I tell him, well, my wife wants to stop yelling at me, and she's very, very unkind. Inconsiderate. Can you talk to her? No. Click. Call me mom. What's your problem? Well, I think I just had this like emotional thing going on, and like I know it's hard to stop drinking, and but sometimes I nope, click, and I did a few of those. You need to do stuff like that to me, and then finally it came out that, you know, David, your problem is right there in the first step. We admit we were powerless over alcohol. If we're powerless over something, what do we need? I am smart enough to figure that out. I said we need power. You know, came to realize that. Hey, man, that's exactly what the program, working the steps and all this stuff is about. It enables us to find a power. And I don't know if it'll solve all our problems, but it can, right? And I did. I had that spiritual awakening, got in touch with the power on whatever level I was at. You know, it's funny because we got to the second step and I told him we can probably skip this because I'm Catholic. I don't think so. We'll probably just read it all day. I already did. And now I get to this prosaic bird and all this stuff. And what the hell? Yeah. Electrons. You know, I didn't do very well in electricity. Now he's talking electrons whirling around each other. Right. But he didn't. He took me through the rest of the steps. You know, I did that third step. And he told me to get down on my knees, maybe, and suggested, maybe you memorize this prayer because it's kind of a prayer that we have here. Alcoholics Anonymous, that they're not saying in the majority of other religious programs, right? You know? And so I started doing that. I did that for years, you know? And I didn't know if it was going to work, but I just did it because he told me to. And I believed that something worked. And, you know, we did a fourth step, and oh my God, he did it like, he didn't do it like all the other sponsors were doing it, you know? We got to that first, second, third column, and then he had me write down the seven areas in my life that are all listed on those pages, right? Ooh, self-esteem, security, pride, all this stuff, man. And for each one of my resentments, when I had that resentment, I was thinking about it, how did that affect how you felt about yourself? Well, shit, not very good. Yeah. It all came down the same thing. I'm an alcoholic, and I think like an alcoholic. And until that thinking is changed, and I become trusting enough to believe in and trust that higher power or that power on a daily basis, there's little chance of me not drinking again, you know? And then I have to do service and pass it on if I want to hold on to it, you know? And all that stuff, and a lot of that stuff came true then. You know, so we're doing this fourth step, right? And he had known this, but he acted like he didn't. He says, it's quite apparent that you have trouble getting along with people. We're going to stop here. We're going to go through these things called the traditions, and they hold Alcoholics Anonymous together, you know? And so we're going to see if we apply those to your personal life, do you think you're getting along with people any better? Just maybe. And we went through the AA traditions. And then went back to the fourth step. We didn't take real long with it, you know, but we went through each and every one. How can I apply that to my life, you know? Although all of a sudden, I didn't have to be the higher, you know, the ultimate authority in my own. I could give others the right to do what they needed to do to some degree, right? And my children especially, oh my God, it was like a sense of ease and comfort when I finally grasped that. A lot of other things too, you know. Work through the 12 steps and get sober and, right, we do that all stuff. It sets our program of ego deflation. What happens when I finish, even though I'm doing a lot of work, ego starts to build itself back up. So I'm calling him and he knows what's going on. 2 years away from a drink, I find myself throwing coffee cups at the kitchen wall because she's still not doing what I want her to do to tell her slow study. And actually, she's doing things that are very disturbing. And I call him up and tell him one more time. He goes, wait a minute. David, I've been talking to you. I don't want to hear that crap. He goes, if your problem is her, we can't help you here. I'm like, helping everybody else. You know, if your problem is the IRS, we can't help you. If your problem is the job, we can't help you. If your problem is, you know, your head screwed on backwards, we can't help you, but we may be able to do something about that. He goes, why don't you try doing what we do for once? I've been doing what you do. And he sent me down another line. He said, here, take this number down. And I jotted it down. He said, I want you to go there Friday and ask anybody if they want to go to a meeting. And I did, and it was the men's homeless shelter. And it was the end of the month. And they got in my car, and I thought I was going to die. It was crazy. And I went there and did that repeatedly. And then after a while, they found out I wasn't stopped for cigarettes or anything. They stopped getting in the car. So I knocked on the door to a local halfway house. They had to go to a meeting. And I didn't drive to a meeting alone for the next 6 or 8 years. Yeah. We even got a meeting started in the halfway house. I had watched what other people were doing. I wrote them a letter and, you know, proposed to them what we were going to do. They said, yeah, that's like 16 years. You know, it was really good. And out of that, guys started asking me to sponsor them. You know, I'd go around looking for guys to sponsor early on. No one would ask. When I stopped looking, started doing more service, they started asking. You know, early on, the guys, you know, that I sponsored, they go to that meeting and a bunch of others, and they'd come up to my house on a Saturday, we meet up, and then read a little and go-go meeting. One day, they brought a coffee pot. They started a meeting in my house at 8 a.m. Saturday morning, and I swear, I didn't do it. They had a vote. Group conscience, right? How could I go against it, right? That went on for like 17 years, and oh, that was the most wonderful thing in my sobriety. Many a guy in our area has been to that house and been through there, and they'll remind me later, you know. What happened? Doing all this stuff, right? Sponsor people. I got involved in service. I even did a stint in service beyond the group level as a GSR and then as a DCM. And my eyes opened up to that, right? So, you know, and I'm reading with these guys, right? So we do things like we read about the concepts pamphlet. Yeah. We read the service manual. Yeah, the responsee, right? And God, we read some god awful books. I mean, some of them are really good. The longest one took us a year and a half to read William James' The Variety of Religious Experience. Woo! And other big ones. I really love AA history. So even all the books, Pass It On, that Bill Wilson story early on. It did. I read it when I was new, and it didn't mean much to me. I read it last year with the sponsee. Oh my God, there was so much stuff in there that I could relate to because I actually felt I knew some of the people from reading, Not God, writing the big book, just anything I could get, anything I could get. We still read, and oh my God, it's just the most wonderful thing. I find that I can stay sober. I think I'm skipping over something grand that I wanted to say or had planned, and I'll tell you about what I was going to say after the meeting, right? And I find that I can stay sober, right? And I get, what do I get? I get a group of people that I can hang out with that have a common purpose. I'm not alone anymore. I have something to do. I have people that actually love me. I've got a wonderful partner, Elle, who's also in the program. We don't sit together at meetings. She sits with the women. I sit with the men. It's just wonderful, and it's really good because she can call out my character defects. Even though she's a long time Al-Anoner, which is good. I've done a little. Thank you. And I find that I can stay sober one day at a time. Let me see. What time am I supposed to talk? 11:55? 11:50? 2 minutes?
No, 2 o'clock.
Oh, it's our time. So what's it like now, right? I still work. I got divorced late in life and that first wife, and I'm building back my 401k. It's just proven, I make decisions based on self that put me in a position later to feel hurt. And what am I going to do? Don't think about it. Don't get mad at her. I've repaired that relationship. I gave her a lot of money. I gave her more than I should have. I gave her my money early. No, I'm not saying that. I just wanted to get out from under it. And I've repaired the relationship. And she returned my summer. Actually, over at my place, having lunch once a week, almost. We talk when she needs money. But it's like really cool, and I do all this stuff, and I don't feel bad. I don't feel bad about myself. Sometimes I don't feel good about myself. Everything's not perfect. And if I just stop to think, man, I'm actually thinking about not having this or not getting that. And there's people in the world who are waking up to nothing, worried about how they're going to live today. And a lot of them are happier than I appear to be at times. I'm so grateful to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and that you all are here. There are different groups like this all over the place. We're going to find them. I know that I can't stay sober without you. So thank you very much.